afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Nick Baer.
And I am your co-host, Nolan Altvedder. Thank you all for tuning in with us this evening on our first summer episode of Dawnland Signals. Today, we will be having a conversation about Wabanaki photography through highlighting two recent exhibit openings at the Abbey Museum in what is now Bar Harbor. What does it mean for Indigenous people to hold and use technology that has been historically used for colonial subjection as a tool for self-determination and communal expression? What is photography's relationship to Wabanaki art over time, and how can museums support this relationship? These are some of the questions we will be discussing with our guests Maya Atien, a Penobscot and Passamaquoddy photographer, and Christiana Becker, a Penobscot curator of education at the Abbey Museum. Before I ask our guests to introduce themselves, I want to invite my co-host Nick to lead us in a land appreciation. Take it away, Nidab.
Leewan. Nibini, or summertime, has blessed Wabanaki territory with much sun and plenty of beauty already this season. We recently experienced the longest day of the year. We were given light from the sun for 15 plus hours that day here in Bunawabskeg area. That is a gift from the Creator. Our summer solstice is a celebration. We get to be outside and enjoy the warmth of summer for longer intervals during this time of year. It is a privilege to be outdoors tending to the earth. I see it as an opportunity to greet the nature around us with a quick quay to the birds and tree dwellers. It's a time to rejoice for not having to bundle up with so many layers. I understand so much more now about the love I felt for being outside when I was younger. I remember the small interactions playing in the dirt with my toys. Ninja Turtles for life, son! And seeing some bugs crawl by on their daily missions, seeing the eagles and herons along the shore perched up in the trees, watching over their playgrounds. The smells of freshly bloomed lupins and lilacs were sweet and sour, and even the pesky insects have a place. All of it is a part of this season. We belong to these lands. They are a part of us, and no matter how far we travel away from them, it will always be with us. Our home is the standard to any other place for me. All of it is what keeps calling the tourists back. What is now called Maine is still Wabanaki home court. Please take time to listen to the birds, smell the flowers, put your gutguzito in the mud or on the grass. These gestures are small enough to practice daily. I challenge everyone listening to this to take 5 minutes today and then again tomorrow to try it out. Open up to Mother Earth and listen to what she has to say. Open up your palms to Grandfather Sun and Grandmother Moon. Let yourself receive these blessings each and every day and give thanks for being here, because the present is a gift. Let us be proud of where our seeds were planted and the roots that connect us to our past relations and their knowledge systems. Let us be a support for all people and living things. We have a responsibility to provide spaces for voices of decolonization. It is an honor to be a part of Dawnland Signals, and I am humbled by the opportunity to connect with my Wabanaki relatives in a new way that only could have been in my ancestors' wildest dreams. Psidagag Nidwi Nudmin Gdakmiguk. Everything I need, I get from the earth. Chi Willy One Della Bemwak. Thank you so much, all my relations.
Oof. Willy One, Nick, for that beautiful introduction. I actually went outside and listened to Mother Earth yesterday, and she told me to put my AC in, so I did that. but I want to start us off to invite our guests here to introduce themselves as they prefer and to share some insights into their profession. Maya, do you mind starting us off with introducing yourself and sharing a little about your relationship to photography? What got you interested in the medium, and what is your approach to using it as an art form?
Yeah, Wooly One, Nolan and Nick for that lovely introduction. And I'm so grateful to be here today. Inda Louise Maya Nujeo Bunawepskeg. My name is Maya. I am an enrolled Penobscot Nation citizen with Passamaquoddy lineage as well. I'm an artist and I grew up on the Penobscot Reservation. I currently reside in Abenaki territory in what's now known as Southern Maine. I started taking photographs when I was in middle school. Like many other children, I wanted to document my own existence. My first images were taken on a digital camera with my best friend Tori. We would carry our cameras everywhere we went and capture just the general silliness of running around on the reservation. As I grew up in the age of MySpace and Tumblr, we naturally wanted to upload everything we took online onto YouTube and make videos of us doing just generally ridiculous things. I sort of thought of photography as this way to capture a moment at that time, holding on to these specific memories to share with others. I don't think I was really thinking about it as an art form, but more as a compulsion for collecting and knowing that I exist and having a little control in my life. I think as a kid, you're always looking for something you can have control over in your own little sphere of the world. As I became an adult, I think I really started to see how photography can operate in new ways that I had never been exposed to beforehand. I worked as a model for a time, and during that time, I was exposed to new photographic processes and different ways of taking photos that I had never seen before. I saw large format film cameras. I learned about photographers such as Francesca Woodman, Sally Mand, who were also self-portrait photographers, and I naturally gravitated towards a practice of self-portraiture as a way to continue marking that existence that I lived. Looking back now and thinking about that, I was probably trying to make sense of my place in the world as I had moved away from the reservation at 19. I was alone in Portland, and I was a white passing Wabanaki person, sort of feeling like I was drifting in between two worlds, the one I had grown up in and the one that I was entering. When I got older, I began to take photography seriously. I was gifted a camera at, I believe I was 20, and I taught myself how to use a 35 millimeter film camera and developed film on my own, but I really didn't have any sort of community or direction around photography. I decided to go back to school when I was 25. I took the non-traditional route and I enrolled at Southern Maine Community College, where I learned sort of a general education on media and graphic design. And then I transferred to the Maine College of Art and Design, where I learned how to print in the darkroom, work with new formats, and I learned about the history of photography. I really started to see that I could use photography to express my lineage, what made me, what interests me, not just how I looked or how beautiful a moment was. I was really interested ultimately in how the photograph can reinterpret events that have happened and the order of time that they fall into. I really am attracted to this way of thinking. I think this non-linear sort of mixing up reality in a way that could have happened but didn't happen is really interesting to me. I began to use photography, not just as a way to make beautiful art that people would be attracted to, but as a way to recontextualize my existence through the path of my ancestors and the land.
For listeners, I've known Maya for a while. I mean, we're relatives, spoiler alert. But yeah, just getting to hear that more intimate story behind how you got into this medium was really beautiful. And as a photographer myself, I find, relating to a lot of that. But yeah, we'll return to sort of your more contemporary practice and perspective on the medium, talking about the exhibits. For now, I want to open it up for Christiana to introduce yourself and maybe share a bit about the Abbey Museum, kind of recognizing, the long kind of pathway that it's taking from where it first opened by Dr. Robert Abbey to where you are now as a curator of education. Yeah, feel free to introduce yourself as you see fit and just share a little bit about your role at the Abbey.
Leavani, thank you, Nolan and Nick, for those great introductions, and thank you, Maya. My name's Christiana Becker. I'm from the Penobscot Tribal Nation. I grew up on the reservation like Maya, and we actually went to school together. I think we're 2 years apart when we went to school together. My background is in education and art. I actually like to tell people I have a pyramid of degrees. I have a master's of intermedia, which is kind of a fancy way to say that research heavily affects my art practice. I also have a bachelor's of art in art education, a bachelor's of fine arts in printmaking is my concentration. And then I have a minor in art history, dance, and business administration. So my college years took a consecutive amount of, I think, 12 years. All of my degrees I got at the University of Maine in Orono, but I did do a year at Virginia Commonwealth University. In Richmond, Virginia, I wanted to see what a university experience was like at a more traditional art school. At the time that I went there, they were the number one public fine art school in the country. And it felt like a really big deal for me to get in because I was one of eight students. But I quickly realized that, professors there didn't really understand the artwork that I was making and how heavily it's attached to my heritage, but also social political issues that revolve around Indigenous people. And there was no Indigenous professor staff, hardly any Indigenous student body. So after a year of school there, I decided to transfer back to UMaine. And it was a much more positive experience, but it was a good learning opportunity for me to realize what kind of art world I wanted to be in. And I had some great opportunities meeting new artists and colleagues and learning very different styles of art. I got to learn how to glass blow, which was a really cool thing. And I wanted to use that material to talk about, how blood quantum and that sort of thing can be fragile, and how to talk about your identity as an Indigenous person. So that was really great in my art career practice. But going to my art education practice, because that's more of what I do here at the museum, I'm the curator of education here. So at the Abbey Museum in Bar Harbor, Maine. So I do all of our tours and programs. I try to create art programs that tie into our exhibits, and also think of art ideas that kind of tie into things we have in our exhibit cases. For instance, we have a lot of birch bark baskets and canoes. So I do a scratch art activity to talk about how the designs are made on birch bark baskets and canoes. But more of that will come later. Talking more about the origin of the Abbey Museum, So we started as a trailside museum in Acadia National Park in 1928. Our founder of the museum is Dr. Robert Abbey. Now, he is not a Wabanaki man. He's not even an Indigenous man. He is a random guy who would come to Bar Harbor, like most, enjoying the scenery as a tourist. He was not local to this area of Maine. And he would find bone and stone tools around the coast of Maine and shell middens and or shell mounds. And he loved them so much that he would show them to his friends, and they had this goal to preserve what they found of what they cataloged as a vanishing race, quote, and wanted to preserve them in a museum, not really realizing that the peoples that made those bone and stone tools were still alive then and is still alive today. That museum still exists in Acadia National Park. It's called Sieur de Mont. It is not currently open to the public because it is being renovated, but we're hoping that it will be open by 2028, which is our 100th anniversary. Very, very exciting. But now we are switching much more into connecting with Wabanaki people, using their lived experience, their voice, their vote in things that we do in our museum. Our board at minimum is 60% Wabanaki. So we're always using their input, their voice, their stories in our exhibits and planning what our new exhibits are going to be. So we have two rotating exhibits that cycle a year off of each other. So right now, one of them is called In the Shadow of the Eagle. And that will come down after Halloween. And then a new exhibit will go into that space. But that exhibit focuses on the 250th anniversary of the United States or signing the Declaration of Independence, but from an Indigenous perspective. And the exhibit is curated by three Indigenous people. They're Donna Loring, who is Penobscot, Darren Ranko, who is Penobscot, and Sierra Height, who is Cherokee. And then our new exhibit that we're talking about mostly in this program is Holding the Light, focusing on Wabanaki contemporary photography. And that exhibit will be up for 2 years this year and next year. And then that will come down after Halloween of 2027. And then a new exhibit will go in that space. So, one of the things I do in sort of assisting our curator of collections and exhibits, his name is Aaron Miller, is sometimes I will propose exhibit ideas. The photography exhibit was one of my ideas, and it took off. And I think we came together with a great show. It was curated by myself, Aaron Miller, and Danica Chartier, who is Eskasoni Mi'kmaq and was one of our Wabanaki fellows this year. And she helped us a lot with curating and putting this exhibit together that we're mainly talking about today.
I do want to take just a moment right now to remind our listeners that you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU FM. I am co-host Nolan Altvater along with co-host Nick Baer. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. And today we are having a conversation about Wabanaki photography in two recent photography exhibits that are currently open at the Abbey Museum in what is now Bar Harbor. These exhibits are titled Holding the Light, Contemporary Wabanaki Photography, which consists of multiple visual artists and includes both photography and visual film, and Skijinawiguk, a solo expedition by Penobscot and Passamaquoddy artist Maya Attian, who is also joining us today alongside the curator of education at the Abbey Museum, Christiana Becker. You just heard Christiana sort of explaining her role at the Abbey and a little bit about the history of Abbey. And I now want to transition into Specifically talking about those two exhibits at the Abbey Museum, Holding the Light, Contemporary Wabanaki Photography, and Maya's solo exhibit, Skijinawikuk, or Native Land. And Maya, I want to start off with Skijinawikuk. Do you mind sharing with the audience sort of what you envisioned this exhibit doing for people building relationships with it, and also the choice of naming it Skijinawikuk, or Native Land?
Yeah, thank you, Nolan, for that intro and questions about this exhibition and installation that I created. I just wanted to first start by giving a little background into the overall series of work that I created that was born into this exhibition. So I'm specifically interested in the photograph's ability to connect with a specific place, which sort of led me to working on my series called Does the Land Remember? It's an exploration of memory in the land through energetic frequencies that are left behind from colonization, places of inhabitants, ceremony, joy, gathering, any sort of energy that was put into the landscape through human interaction. I'm really interested in how our land holds memory of our people and how these energetic shifts are felt within the land and body and throughout all living things in plants and animals. A lot of my work starts with historical research about locations, different place name maps, language, significance events, or documents that have happened, like the proclamations, Reverend Thomas Smith creating the first parish church in Portland, things like that. And I'm really trying to photograph to see the unseeable. You know, I think about only 5% of our reality is observable of the energy that compromises our universe. And so I really work in reciprocity with the land, trying to gain perspective and an energy exchange every time I enter into the land and create with it. With Skijinawikuk, I really wanted it to be an installation that it's a reflection of our shared connectivity with the land and our connective consciousness. I use natural sonic impressions and larger than life photographs to immerse the viewer in our land and worldview and sort of take the viewer out of being at the Abbey and to another place. Our Wabanaki existence really transcends colonialisms and is instead grounded in our reciprocal relationship with the land, water, our plants, our animals, our sun, our moon, the stars. I really wanted that to be apparent in this installation. So, in the installation, I have images of my homeland, Anabe Menahen, or Indian Island, to really reflect my and our connection with our river that we belong to, the Penobscot River. I have fire that is pictured on one of the panels that reflects our ancestral memory, our connection through our shared DNA. I have braided grass to reflect how alive our earth is and how we care for her. And I really want to think within this framework that past, present, and future remain in this constant dialogue, defying colonial constructs of time and connection. The piece itself is meant to be a reminder of our spiritual power that we all have. I learned about the concept of Madewin recently, and it's something that comes up with me often, and this personal responsibility to our people and to the land, and how that gives us spiritual power. And I named this piece Skijinawiguk, or Native Land, for the very reason that it's sort of complementing the In the Shadow of the Eagle exhibition, marking the 250th anniversary of the so-called United States. And I wanted to make it a statement saying that this land will and always will be Native land. And despite these years passing, our presence remains intact, and the land speaks our language and understands our people.
Ooh. Well, you and Maya, I'm looking forward to seeing this exhibit. Nolan just shared with me that he's already seen it, so I gotta come down there and check it out. Christiana, do you mind sharing more about the Holding the Light exhibit? And what artists are featured? Maybe even share some of your favorite images that are included.
Yeah, so the artists that are part of Holding the Light are Jared Link, who is Mi'kmaq, Maya Atian, who is Penobscot and is on this radio program, Nolan Altervater, Passamaquoddy, one of the co-hosts on this program as well, Desmond Simon, who is Mi'kmaq, Lakota Sanborn, Penobscot, Nate Gaffney, Willis Dugwe, or Maliseet, Danica Chartier, who is Eskasoni Mi'kmaq, and Anne Pollard-Renko, who is Penobscot. And curating the show, I will admit it was hard to choose what works from each artist we wanted, but that's more because I wanted more than what we could allow. So we had to pick about like three works of art per artist out of their portfolios. So that was kind of sometimes tricky to narrow it down, but when you're curating with two other people, it's a lot easier. So you can be like, oh, we all love this one, so we're definitely doing this photo. Two of us like this photo, so we'll do that one too. And that kind of helped us narrow it down. But then we also had to think of how do all the works go together as an exhibit as a whole to also centralize the theme of the show. So we also had to think about that, and we wanted to make sure that there was kind of a balance between black and white works and works in color. There was a lot of other intentional decision making that went into the show. There are two beautiful pieces. One is by Nolan. I can't remember the name of your piece, but it's your moons, where there's a moon in the middle and then there's moons all around in a circle, and it has these reddish hues in the photo. And then there's a photo by Anne Pollard-Renko of a landscape that is in autumn. And you can see a reflection from the trees in the water, and it kind of makes its own circular pattern. So we liked those photos together in creating a circle, and that they both have reds in them. And those photos are on two walls that then lead into a room behind it where there's a red wall. So the red wall is kind of meant to draw your eyes to those red photos. And then on the red wall of photos is all black and white photos, so that colored photos don't interfere with the red wall. So there was a lot of intentional decision making that went into the curation of the show. And one of my goals for the show was to get an artist from each of the Wabanaki tribal nations in the show. And from the cohort of artists, there was a lot of you that already work together with photography as kind of what I want to call an artist collective. I already knew of Nolan and Maya and Danica and Anne and Jared and Lakota, but I didn't know of Desmond Simon or Nate Gaffney, who are actually the videographers in the show. And
I went to Danica as our Wabanaki fellow and co-curator to ask her if she knew of any Maliseet photographers or videographers, and also Abenaki from Canada at Odinak and Wolanoc Nation. And she knew of Nate Gaffney, and that gave us a Maliseet artist in the show that I was very happy to reach that goal. The only artist that we're missing is an artist from the Abenaki tribal nations at Odinak and Wolanoc Tribal Nation. And we did reach out to a couple artists, but we weren't successful in adding them to the show. So, sort of reached the goal in that we have all the tribal nations from the Wabanaki that are still currently in Maine and have land in Maine, but did not get an artist from Abenaki. My favorite works in the show. Now there are a lot, but I really like Maya Atian's work passing through the wall. I really like photographs that have been printed on vinyl that we have been doing in our exhibits lately. And there's another vinyl piece by Lakota Sanborn that I like as well. Fortunately, do not remember the title of the piece. I also like Desmond Simon's video, Medicine in the Wabanaki Forest, and Pollard Ranko's Heartways, and Danica Chartier's Bloodlines and Untitled photographs.
Yeah, thank you for sharing the behind the scenes with the curation. It really is, a feat in of itself, especially trying to build, these like respectful relationships with artists and people in the Wabanaki community, and being an artist like involved in the show, like couldn't speak more to, this great project of, as you said, like the collective, like really being able to come together and tell our stories with each other side by side and do it in a respectful process of working with museum staff like you and the staff at the Ebbe Museum. So yeah, Kchiwiliwun, Christiana, and Maya, I'd like to sort of kick it back over to you to add anything that you'd like to about Holding the Light. I know that you also have some work in that, and maybe specifically focus on the role of sort of self-portraiture and the use of the body in your work, and how you see that show up in Holding the Light as well.
So I just wanted to add a little note about the Abbey Museum in relationship to my practice. The Abbey Museum was actually the first place I ever showed work when I was in seventh grade. They have this student art show every year, and I had one of my prints that I made with block and ink that was a transformation of an eagle to a horse. And that was the first time I ever showed art. And so when the Abbey contacted me years later to acquire some of my pieces for their first photographs for their collection, it really felt like a full circle moment to me and feels like the right place to be showing my work right now. Speaking about holding the light, I really believe that I love to see these threads of belonging that are within this show. You can see where either belonging to each other or to the land is really present, whether it be through the landscape, through photos of Danica's family with their hands together, and through self-portraiture. I really personally use self-portraiture as a way to have my body as an energy vessel for this energy that I feel is captured in the landscape. And I also use it as a symbol of tension. Often my photos are pieces of legs or arms or anonymous, like I'm looking away from the camera, going somewhere else. And to me, I really want to use that to show this tension that I feel living in a colonized world, but having a decolonial values, and how it can feel very polarizing, this existence of being indigenous in a mostly white state. And I think that's one of the main reasons I've really held on to self-portraiture for so long, is because I'm attached to explaining this existence that I feel like not many people completely understand. I also just wanted to say that the title, Holding the Light, is a title that came from my photograph about, and the title to me is really about our connection as people from the Dawn Land. Photography is all about our relationship to light, and we are the people of the dawn. We are the first to see the light, and it really kind of just brings full circle our worldview into the picture.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think I don't want to take up too much space being a host for the show, but obviously being involved in the exhibit, I just like relating so much specifically about the use of the body within sort of, what I see as like indigenous art and photography and in my own practice. If you look at think of the history of colonialism, of it being a project of eliminating indigenous people that. It for the land, that's really predicated on controlling the body or making indigenous people's body intelligible through coloniality. If you look at the earliest records of quote unquote explorers coming to our homelands, the first thing that they were doing was making comments on the appearance of our bodies because based on our stature depend or communicated to them the quality of our land. So they saw us with this quote unquote good stature and like good physical appearance, and they saw that as a means of like, oh, their homelands must be quote unquote rich and fertile. So like ever since the beginning, and specifically with queer and women, the body of women and queer indigenous folk, that's always been a project of colonialism. And then, fast forward to today when we like indigenous people collectively have built this project of self-determination. Thinking about that on the level of the body and what it means to have a body, sort of that dual approach to it of both like regaining our own our own bodily narratives and understandings of self in our homelands, but also sort of like what Maya was also talking about of like figuring out what it means to have a body in general, and turning towards photography and portraiture to really to do that and be in connection with our homelands through our body as well. And I do also just want to take a step back to remind our listeners that you are tuning into Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nolan Altvater along with co-host Nick Baer. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are having a conversation about Wabanaki photography in two recent exhibits that are currently open at the Abbey Museum in what is now Bar Harbor, Maine. The exhibits are titled Holding the Light, Contemporary Wabanaki Photography, which consists of multiple visual artists and includes both photography and film, and Skijinawiguk, a solo exhibition by Penobscot and Passamaquoddy artist Maya Attian, who is joining us today alongside the curator of education at the Abbey Museum, Christy Anna Becker. And I kind of want to go back to Maya. You kind of started talking about it a little bit in terms of photography being really a recent acquisition or a recent place at the Abbey Museum, but sort of thinking of quote unquote traditional indigenous art or Wabanaki art overall. A lot of people tend to think of black ash baskets or birch bark baskets, birch bark canoes, quill work, and so on, and not necessarily photography. And then also thinking of photography's relationship to, say, Western art in general, it's really considered a more recent medium or recent fine art starting in the late 19th century and early 20th century. So, with that in mind, I'm curious, Maya, how you understand photography's relationship to this notion of quote unquote traditional or Wabanaki art, and how you maybe see this practice of image making being present across not just in this contemporary generation, but as an intergenerational practice rather than just a contemporary form.
Photography itself is such a complicated art form. It started as a way to catalog, remember, keep record of, and document. It wasn't until fairly recently that the art world really recognized photography's ability to tell stories, interpret, and really viewed it as a fine art form that it is. Many, when they think of photography, they think, oh, photographs don't lie, it's the absolute truth. And I think that's completely the opposite. There are so many ways to exclude what's in a frame, to lie, to recontextualize a moment, and to make believe of what happened. That's one of the reasons I really love it, to be honest. There's just so many possibilities. When I was learning about Indigenous people's relationship to photography in school, I was often given references to people like Ed Curtis, who, if people don't know who he is, he's a turn of the century photographer who photographed, made it his life's work to go to every different reservation, mostly out west. I don't see any of Wabanaki people in his books, but he would take these portraits of everybody done up in their regalia, and they were very serious and staged, and they would be named things like Hopi woman with no name, or this just things that completely erased our identities to the actual, like any clues to who this actual person was. And this way of photographing really romanticized us into and really set us back. It put us in this view from modern day perspective that we still lived in the past and that modern day Native people did not exist. This also just reinforces the viewpoint that Indigenous people, we all create beadwork, baskets, regalia, and we are so tied to our traditional arts. And I just think that our tools have changed over the years, and that really means that our art and expression naturally evolved with the rest of the world. It just makes sense that we are using this tool once garnered for colonial oppression and controlling and reclaiming it for our own indigenous narratives. This builds the tension, I think, within the whole indigenous narrative of photography. And there are actually so many indigenous photographers that I was not informed of in school, but I did some research on my own to find, and photographers like Zig Jackson, who used his own. He would take these photographs of himself dressed in full headdress and just walking around random places in San Francisco or Southern California, and people just othered him. And it would just exemplify the experience of being an Indigenous American in this white world. I hope that this Wabanaki presence in photography continues to live on through collaboration. And I think it really just speaks to our creativity as a people and how we use different methods of mark making and image making, like petroglyphs or birch bark baskets, or creating songs or storytelling. And now we're using photography as another tool to do these, reinterpret our stories, tell our values, and cross mediums even with these two, with this newer art form, with our traditional. And it's really opening up a whole new language of how we work as Wabanaki people and creating a new dialogue of how we can reinterpret our world that we're living in.
Yeah, that's what was also running through my mind is like, not only are we, I mean, A, like, not only have we done what you like termed as mark making, image making, you know, for thousands and thousands, like the old, like, oldest petroglyphs are 3 to 5,000 years old. And that was a clear understanding of light in terms of where we were deciding to make those marks in relationship to the sunrise. To today, it's like we're still using it for these same reasons of telling our stories. And super also like just excited of thinking about not only are we doing that, but when it comes to like sort of the philosophy or like understanding of the use of art, of also like using our own knowledge systems to make sense of it. So really turning towards our languages and our ways of knowing and being to understand sort of the how art and photography is talked about with each other. And that's why I just love being in that collective that Christiana brought up. So Willy Wunmaya, I now want to open it up to Christiana. As sort of Maya was touching upon, photography is really something new to the Abbey Museum, with these first exhibits sort of being the first ones curated for the medium of photography. And I'm curious if you could share a little about a bit more of how this exhibit came to be. You mentioned that it was sort of your idea to bring this contemporary photography exhibit to the Abbey, and I'm just interested, where did that, why all of a sudden, or where did that interest come from for that medium?
Great question. So this kind of was an idea from a year plus ago. So we started doing this program called Collection Spotlights, where we would invite Wabanaki people into our collection to focus on one of the things or multiple things in our collection that they would talk about and spotlight. So, some of the folks we invited were artists, some were historians, some were archaeologists. So, they're from all different backgrounds. And we invited Danica Chartier to do a collection spotlight. And when she was looking in our collection, she was specifically looking for photographs because that's her medium. And we only found a few photographs, and they weren't even taken by Wabanaki people. They were taken at like markets or festivals and like events we did, but they were photographed by non-native people. And then she pivoted and was looking for like contemporary art we had in our collection. In that moment, Aaron and I really realized that we didn't have any photographs by Wabanaki or Indigenous people, and we didn't have a lot of 2D contemporary art of either drawings, paintings, photographs, prints. And we wanted to make it our goal to focus on that and try to bring more of that into our exhibits, into our collection. And another focus that Aaron has put into the exhibits that I really love is he is trying to show things from the past as well as current today. So we have some exhibit cases that have beaded pouches, beaded 2D pieces, a beaded barrette from the past, and then we also have beaded pieces that are current from today. So we have like a beaded purse, a different beaded hairpiece, another beaded pouch. So you can see how past meets present future, and also showing that Wabanaki people are still creating traditional forms or traditional art, as well as contemporary modern art. So we also have paintings in the exhibits now. We have a case that kind of shows that like past to present, where there's a wooden flute that you usually will see today if you're at an Indigenous flute performance, but then we also have bone flutes to show how flutes were made in the past. So I think like that's a really cool thing that we're doing on our exhibits right now, is also focusing on tradition and culture and showing that Wabanaki people are still around today, and just like everybody else, are contemporary modern people who also make contemporary modern art. And when I got to know Danica from that collection spotlight, I was also on a panel where she was the moderator with Historic New England, and Lakota Sanborn and Jared Link were on the panelists with me. So as I got to know Danica more and the photographers that she works with in that collective, I went to Aaron and I was like, there's already all these great Wabanaki photographers who have a collective together. We should exhibit them. And it kind of just went from there, where we started to have conversations with the artists, asked to look at your portfolios and start to think of how the exhibit could all come together. And we're still trying to focus on bringing more contemporary modern art from Wabanaki people in in the museum. We have so many beautiful, beautiful baskets, and we still get donations of baskets and many other things. We also will acquire and buy baskets from Wabanaki artists, but I think that trying to focus more on what the younger generation of Wabanaki people is making is something that really interests me, which is also why when curating this photography show, I always thought of it more as emerging younger artists, more in like their late 20s to I think 30s is around like the age range of most of the artists in the show. So that was another thing that was kind of intentional, as we wanted it to be an exhibit that was mostly about artists from this more younger generation. And I've just really liked being a part of that and learning more about curating shows and that process from Aaron.
Beautiful. Yeah, thank you. I just want to give a heads up. We have about like 4 minutes left with each other. And I just want to save some time for both of you to A, talk about, what do you have planned for the summer, or in the future, near future, or also speak to anything that we might not have touched upon. Maya, I'm wondering if you could start us off. Yeah, what do you have for plans in the future?
Yeah, so I'm really hoping for more collaboration with my Wabanaki photography cohort that we've seemed to create. This summer, we're going to Allen and Benner Island together, which is former home to the Wyeths, and also former summering grounds for Wabanaki people for thousands of years. I'm working on a project there where I will use these islands to create a speculative narrative, thinking about how it would feel to meet your ancestors and how it would look to reclaim an island that we thought was lost to us. I really hope to interpret major paintings that were made on the island with my own Wabanaki worldview as well. Other things I have going on, I have a book coming out of my work called Does the Land Remember? And that will be published with Witch Elm Press sometime this fall. I am attending an opening for a exhibition at the Main Mill where Lakota Sanborn and I collaborated on a piece that will be there opening next Saturday in Lewiston. Nolan and I will be at the Dawnland Festival speaking on Native photography on Sunday, I believe, July 12th. And then I will be part of a show next year at Bowdoin Museum College of Art. I don't have the exact name for the show, so stay tuned. I will also be part of a show in Nebraska at the Sheldon Museum, which is actually all works by Marston Hartley, who is a landscape painter primarily painting landscapes in Maine and from Maine. So it's kind of my work will be my Wabanaki worldview that contrasts his paintings. And I'm also moving down to New Haven to attend school at Yale to get my MFA in photography. So very excited to see what the future holds. I've got a lot going on, and I'm so grateful to be here and speak with everybody today. It was so wonderful. Nola's welcome and woolly one.
Things that are going on in the near future of the Abbey, just like Maya said, we have a Dawnland Festival on Saturday, July 11th, and Sunday, July 12th at the College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor. It will be from 9 to 5 on Saturday and 9 to 4 on Sunday. There's no ticket admission price, so you don't have to worry about that. But there will be over 50 Indigenous vendors selling their craft, their wares, their artwork. We'll also have panelists and performers and food trucks. It's a really big event that is just a great coming together of Wabanaki and other Indigenous tribal nations. The other programs that we have going on, like I said earlier, I try to think of art programs that kind of tie into our exhibits. So, to tie in with the photography exhibit, I'm going to be doing a Sienna type workshop where we use the sun to do sun prints, is sometimes what they're called. But, like with silver gelatin prints that come out black and white, Sienna type photos come out blue and white because they react to a different chemical than silver in black and white photography. I've done it before. It's a lot of fun. I'm doing one of those programs in August, September, and October, weather permitting, because we do need the sun. It does require developing your own photos, which, if you don't know, you develop your photos in water, so your hands might get wet if you're interested in doing that workshop. And we're doing photograms. So when you do photogram photography, it kind of does a like silhouette of your object on the page. And then other great programs that we have going on in the summer, on select Wednesdays, we do cultural connections in Acadia National Park, where we invite Wabanaki artists or historians or drummers and musicians to do what we call an educational demonstration. So if you're a musician or a performer, you'll likely perform. We already had the Burnawebsky Singers, which Nick Bear, co-host of the program, is a part of last month in, nope, in this month in June. We're still in June. But the next one will be July 1st with Lydia Soktoma, who is Passamaquoddy, and will be doing a basket making demonstration. Then we have one on July 22nd with Thunder Woman Drum, which is a Passamaquoddy women's drum group. Then we have one on August 5th with David Sanapas, who is Mi'kmaq, who will be doing a flute performance. August 26th with Brittany Sakabison, who is Passamaquoddy, who will be doing a beading demonstration. And the last one is on September 9th with Jen Pictou, who is Mi'kmaq, and will be doing a quill work demonstration.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. A big chi willy one. Thank you very much, Maya and Christiana, for joining us today. Really loved our conversation. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. Thank you to volunteer technician Scarlett Tudor for her assistance and support. Love you, Scarlett. Be sure to join us next month on August 4th and every first Tuesday of the month for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Stay tuned for more great programming here on WERU-FM. Up, Judge.
Up, Judge.
Tahoe!